Hello and welcome to the Cynic Weekly on Thursday the 14th of March 2024. I'm your host Barry Gallagher and tonight I'm joined by Lorenzo Pinchiti. Lorenzo, how are you?
Good evening. I am good. I am terrified. I'm excited. This part of the season for the Celtic side fills me with too many emotions.
Yeah, hopefully. Hopefully it'll be positive ones. Okay, I'm also joined by Stuart Duggan. Stuart, how are you?
I'm good, thanks. You've got Welsh and scales compared to
Alan and Sormani's CCV and Starfelt.
We're longing for the days. We used to keep it tight at the back. But
if you could feed us softball questions. Yeah.
No direct long balls. Yeah.
Down the channels. Right, we're going to get straight into our opening question then. So, Lorenzo, I'll come to you first. So, if Callum McGregor, Cameron Carter-Vickers and Rio Hatate were to be fit for the remaining games after international break, how confident would you be of retaining the league title?
I think it would take me up to 50-50. I think right now I'm at like 40-60 pessimism. Okay. And it's mostly to do with the centre-halves. So, Cameron Carter-Vickers back would be a huge boost. It just feels so like unlikely that you're going to get consistent months now out of CCV. It just feels like we're at that point with him now, which worries me. Hatate back again, like there's an issue with the way the team's playing, and in the midfield there's so many disjointed performances and it doesn't necessarily feel like a dynamic, mavericky kind of player like Hatate is going to change that too much. We've already got a lot of talent in there that's not quite clicking, and then having your captain out the rest of the season I think would be a huge blow regardless of McGregor's form going up and down. So I think I'm at the point right now where I think it's going to hinge on the derby games, and I'm always confident in our team being able to show their quality in these games against Rangers, particularly at home. So I think if you offered me that kind of spine back, that kind of guarantee, and for me, if you add to that like a Kyogo starting again in this team that is clicking, I'd make us favourites for the league. I'd be confident of turning Rangers over. But it's weird to talk about it because it feels so alien right now, or like a risk to expect all three of these players to be, or any like a full team to be fit for a few months.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I think if we could, we don't ask for a lot, I don't think we could have a full complement of players available, then it gives us a fighting chance. But Stuart, what's your take on the opening question?
Well, I think the flat answer to the question is I would feel more confident, but that's probably still coming from like a position of pessimism at the moment. I don't think it's realistic either, just with the number of games that we have remaining, with the inconsistencies in Cameron Carter-Vickers' ability to stay fit this season, with Rio Hatate taking quite a few games to get up to speed and also having had two quite serious injuries this season, and then the unknown nature of Callum McGregor's injury. But what I think would actually be really positive, if you can get them together for a game, as in like having them in the squad, I think that right now there's such fine margins between winning and losing games, which is I think where a lot of the negativity comes from, because you used to be confident going in to a St Johnstone game, a Livingston game, and now we do look quite beatable with key players out of the team. I think as well there's a real narrative around the fact that this Celtic team are quite fragile and quite weak, and I think that if nothing else, as you kind of come into the real kind of fine margins of the season, it would change the narrative that this is a resurgent Celtic team, or now Celtic have all their best players back, you can expect a higher level. And I think that that might go some way towards either putting a little bit of fear into the opposition, or at least just offering something different. And if there's something different that you can offer now is your best players and your best team, then that's great. And I think that, you know, it's documented week in, week out, some of the failings from the manager this season, but you do have to say he's particularly hard done by with injuries, and you have missed really key players for long periods of time. So we are where we are. I don't think that we're going to turn a corner or get that result where it all clicks. I think that the team is just not fundamentally at the level at the moment, and if you can include these players either even for key games, that might be the best way to kind of manage them over the course of the season, whether that's getting Carter-Vickers back for Ibrox, getting Callum McGregor certainly for that, and then anything you can get out of Hatate. And then, again, schedule however you have to manage their injuries for the last derby of the season, if it is going to be that tight.
Yeah, I think so. And just on that as well, we've got a listener's question from Laura. I don't know if it's my Laura. I'm doing a bit nice if she told me, but I don't imagine it is. She says, hail, hail, Cynic Panel. What does the panel feel will change when Rio Hatate hopefully returns to the first team? Would you play him at Livingston with that pitch and risk him before Rangers, or do you throw him in straight away? Now, Rangers, that's a kind of damned if you do, damned if you don't, because we all know it does take, traditionally, Rio Hatate quite a while to get up and running. Mm-hmm. Any minutes you could get in him at all before Ibrox would be great, but it's probably the worst place you could possibly be going because of the plastic pitch.
Yeah, the fear with Hatate is that he's almost like a damned if you, damned if you don't, even in terms of throwing him into a game like Ibrox, because he is that kind of player that could just show his quality, something completely different, turns up on the day and wins us the game. Or you see Rio Hatate at Ibrox and you think, Jesus, this guy's a month off match fitness. Yeah. So it's kind of a coin toss in that. I think Stuart's point about the strength of the squad when they come back, it does feel like there's a lot of games where we hit a brick wall at the hour mark or whatever, and it just starts to feel like one of those games that's a fine margin. Whereas if there is a Hatate coming off the bench when a Bernardo's just being ineffective or a O'Reilly's having an off game, there's a difference there in completely different kind of player, completely different attributes, something that the defence would have to think about, something that would actually make a defence pull out of their shape and start to worry about them. That could be something that gets us over the line in tight games, and it might be the same at Ibrox. Ibrox, for me, the worry's the... It's all about CCV being fit, and then around that, it's how solid can we stay to have somebody like Kyogo pop up with a goal. So if Hatate's fit for that, I don't know. I mean, unless there's some real reason in training that he's really up at it, I'd probably keep him on the bench until he's really needed to put him on there.
And I think, just as you mentioned, CCV there as well, just to kind of add this to Laura's question, obviously there's not a lot of games now before Ibrox itself. CCV, there's a lot of talk that he's available for Saturday. And then Stuart, with the next game being Livingston away on that pitch, do you bring him out for that? And then he's not really getting a run as well. So we probably couldn't have had worse luck, I think, in terms of the fixtures with it being Livingston before we go to Ibrox.
Yeah, it feels like everything's... It's almost like a big old conspiracy. Is it too late to call conspiracy on the whole thing? I think that... Do you know what CCV reminds me of at the moment? Do you remember Ledley King's Spurs career where he was having to be managed? He only trained like two or three times a week and mostly in a swimming pool and had all kinds that's of right. like weird caveats, but then he would be able to go in and just play on match day. And I don't know, I'm not suggesting that's what we should go and do, but it's just reminiscent of that where you might have to manage his minutes to that extent. I think that Celtic should have enough to win away at Livingston. I know we're going to come and talk about how fucking the state of the weekend, but they should have enough to win that game where you don't have to take that risk for Carter Vickers. And I don't think that for Carter Vickers it's match fitness and sharpness. I think he's not as consistent as he's been, but I think you still see he's levels above anything that we have. Yeah. For Hatate, my concern would be putting him in firstly against Livingston and getting injured, secondly straight into a game like Ibrox that's going to be really fast paced, really chaotic and really, really high pressure. And I think that that's probably not the best solution for just now, given the important games that will follow after it. I do think if you can get them back, the kind of following on from what Lorenzo was saying, it's not just the lift that it gives the squad, but I think you'll see better performances from O'Reilly, Kyogo, Maeda, all these sorts of players, because I kind of feel like amongst the malaise that's kind of setting in, Matt O'Reilly's form from the first half of the season has kind of gone off a cliff. And I don't know whether or not it's not to criticise him and say that he's not trying hard enough, not playing well enough, but I wonder if he's the sort of player that thrives when other areas of the team are doing well and he can just sort of add on to that as opposed to being the guy that everyone's looking to dig us out.
Yeah, make things happen.
And I sort of feel like if he looks alongside and sees a Hatate instead of, you know, a Bernardo or whoever that he's having to kind of maybe do extra work for, you might get a bit more out of him.
Yeah, I totally agree. You touched on it there, Stuart. We'll go straight to looking at the Scottish Cup quarter-final victory against Livingston. 4-2-1. Spoilers if anyone hasn't seen it yet. We were talking earlier just before we came on about people watching things on delay. That'd be a hell of a delay. Lorenzo, what was your general thoughts on the game? It was a roller coaster, actually. I thought the first half we were pretty good, but we mentioned earlier about it gets to a certain period in the game and things tend to kind of, the wheels come off almost for a period in the game.
Yeah, I think the defensive liabilities that we have at the back are so stark that what an otherwise like totally acceptable good performance will never look good anymore now until this defence is sorted. Yeah. It doesn't matter how we need to play like amazing. We need to blow a team away. Otherwise, it's always going to be like this. It's always going to feel bitty. We're always going to feel vulnerable. And this Celtic team can be levels above a Livingston in a first half. And if they don't score four, or even you know, two or three or anything, it does just feel like, well, they only need two chances.
Yeah.
You know, we don't play against teams. It's not like we're giving up tons of chances, but the quality of the chances we give the opposition because the mistakes are so bad. Just leave us so vulnerable the whole time. We're just completely like at the mercy of whatever random striker, you know, from the SPFL decides he's going to have his best day.
Yeah.
And it just always feels like that. It's like he's been causing Celtic problems all day and I've never heard of this guy.
Yeah.
It's the same every week. And it's just somebody that will make Welsh turn. Mm-hmm. That's it.
Yeah.
And that seems to be the philosophy. So every game we watch now, I think if it was a more solid defence, I'd be like, that was decent. It's not as exciting as I'd like to be, but it was decent. But I just felt watching this game, I'm like, this is shite. Because I just felt that like awareness that we could 100% just drop points or go out of this cup even worse. It's just going to happen. And without the kind of all the good things that happen, we'll talk about Kuhn maybe, all these kind of positives, they're just completely negated by the most simple things. And it's really frustrating, but in general, I thought it was okay, wasn't it?
I think, totally agree with what Lorenzo's saying there, Stuart. It's almost like we need a Dundee-type performance every week, and that's not sustainable at all. And it used to be, just when you were talking there, Lorenzo, I was thinking about that used to be how it would be in Europe. Like, you think we almost need to be about 3-0 up when you're playing well to have a chance to win. And it's really depressing, Stuart, that that's crept into our domestic performances.
It is. I felt like the weekend was sort of like a greatest hits package from this season where, you know, or maybe it's actually easier to look at Dundee as the outlier and say what was different about Dundee. And I think that the difference in the Dundee game was that they took all the chances.
Yeah.
So they were able to like get ahead of steam 4-5-0.
And they could relax a bit.
Could relax and just like play their game because, you know, we just missed so many chances. I thought Dyson Maeda deserves an enormous amount of credit for his hat-trick. It's not even like a far-reaching thing to say that he could have had two hat-tricks. Like, he missed. And so you can't really criticise him because he's scored three, but you're talking about two absolute sitters that he's missed, and then he's had other good chances as well. So it's just that lack of kind of killer instinct, clinical finishing, and then just comedy slapstick defending. And I think that's why when there's a Carter Vickers present in the team, I know that he's definitely played in games that we've sort of struggled, but at no point have we looked just so likely to concede at any moment when he's there. Yeah, and I think that it must feed into the players around and about. I think it must feed into the likes of Taylor and Johnson when they see that they're playing with Scales and Welsh. Yeah. There's no point in being like, let's just call it what it is. That they must know that they have to play their game maybe slightly differently as a result, and that leads to this just like anxiety, and you know we play against it's not like it's a novelty to concede a goal at Celtic Park. It's always happened. It's just that now it happens with such regularity that you're like, where's that come from? Like that was Livingston's near enough like first chance they scored from, and credit to the boys,
it was
an incredible finish.
It was.
And the second is an incredible finish as well. But then that puts you in the territory of they just need a header or a bad decision and then you're out the cup and it's doomsday. And if it's not for that Joe Hart save, the tide was really turning at that point. Just really weird because it was a really poor performance overall. But you could still see there was like a gap in quality between the teams, but just that we were so bad in certain areas that you could conspire to lose that game. And I think that that's just been the problem the whole season.
Yeah, I think so. And we touched on earlier, Lorenzo, about that. Like, it's almost like the team can't function because they know that the back door's left open so many times. And the point that Stuart made there about the fullbacks, it does curtail the way they want to play because Celtic fullbacks in any era were always known for sort of going forward. But if you can't play your natural game because you're having to tuck in, and ironically that's where most of the chances are coming from, between the centre half and the full back. But it's having an effect throughout the team and it's kind of spreading almost this vulnerability.
Yeah, I mean you're only as good as your weakest link, and I think when you see the fall off Johnson's had, it's not even so much his own ability or the way he's playing. I think it is that lack of connection with the centre half.
Mm-hmm.
Because he still, when he bombs forward, You know, you'll see the qualities of Johnston, you'll see his all action, you'll see his good ideas. But all a team needs to do is play a ball between Welsh and Johnston. Mm-hmm. That's it, over and over again. We talked about it. We did the Tears of the Cynic where we kind of rank the players. I think it was just a season one. And I said it then, I don't have any reason to believe Stephen Welsh is an SPL, Scottish Premiership level defender. Mm-hmm. I think he's somebody we've plugged in dominant teams who's looked quite bad kind of all the time. And he's had the odd good performance. And now we're left in a position where we've got two centre-halves who are basically both that. They're two guys that were signed, or not signed, signing skills in a sense, who you can plug in on like an extreme where they've ended up being fifth or sixth choice. And we've gotten such a malaise defensively and transfer-wise where they're now just guys that we're supposed to expect to see in a team sheet.
Yeah.
You know, with a fully fit team and a properly working transfer system, the idea of the two of them being involved in the second half of a season in particular at Celtic together is so insane. Yeah. And I don't think you can take that for granted about how disjointed this team looks when our two core defenders, whose entire job is to keep things so, you know, locked door, particularly at home, no team should come in with like a serious hope of winning against that Celtic team that's rolling. And scoring two goals at Parkhead should be the end of it.
Yeah.
But with these two, I'm being so rude to them as if their mums are listening. It does just leave that door open, and the rest of the team's, I think, pretty aware of that. And whether they're not, the opposition is, and the management is, and all the other team has to do now is keep sticking long balls up and see what one sticks. And that's scary that a team can get through us that easily.
Definitely. Stuart, you want to come in?
Yeah, it feels like a Venn diagram where the failings of the board and the manager intersect with the situation at centre-back, where obviously Rodgers isn't happy with the recruitment. He's not been happy with like Sivnarotsky, clearly not happy with Lagerbielka. And so that's why he's kind of preferring the likes of Welsh as the kind of cover. But his persistence to keep playing Liam Scales is the thing that I think he's going to be absolutely crucified for at the end of the season, because there's very little justification for it. And you have a player who has spoken, I'm sure I've talked about it on podcast, during the Champions League kind of run when he was doing press, he was talking openly about how he goes out and smells the roses before games because he doesn't know how long this will last, because he is acutely aware that he is not where he should be.
Yeah.
And I think that he's aware of that. I think his teammates are aware of that, and the fan base are definitely aware of that. And he deserves credit for playing above his level when he did, but he hasn't, and he hasn't for some time. And yet it's inconceivable that he's not going to start every game between now and the end of the season, barring injury or suspension. That's something that the manager's going to have to carry the can for. Obviously, I think he'll point to the fact that he's not been given X, Y, or Z in terms of recruitment, but I just think there's more that he could be doing with the situation just now, and it is just really alarming, the drop-off in quality that's been allowed at the club from last season, and I think it's just so typified by that.
Yeah, I think I said that a few weeks ago. It reminds me of, remember when he signed Jack Hendry, and it was almost like a vanity project, like I'm going to make this guy a player. It kind of had the same vibes with Liam Scales.
So.
And just on that, Scott sent in a question saying, if Liam Scales is given a 5-year contract extension, then I fully expect them to replace Rodgers. Once he either gets offered a job which pays more or can be used as a sacrificial lamb, whichever comes first. With Lennon again, oh good. If a player like Scales can be rewarded with a deal like that, then we might as well get Lennon back. We're going backwards at an alarming rate, and it would fit the narrative this board see for the club. I hope I'm wrong. Avoiding the Neil Lennon thing, because I can't deal with that.
Yeah. One thing at a time.
But when Andrew Given Scales, after everything we've just said, they're a 5-year deal. The only benefit I could see from that is if we were to use it to try and get more money from him, because I think Alan's often said this season, the fact that he has performed to a certain extent, he's played in the Champions League, he's played a number, almost a whole season now at Celtic. If he was ever going to go for money, it would be this time. But if we were to give him a 5-year contract and he was to see out even half of that or 3 years of it, it would be pretty alarming.
Yeah, as long as he's on, you know, reserve level wages, I think the idea of it being a way to get a transfer fee from him is fine. But that, you know, that assumes that we have a board that operates properly in the transfer window and is going to get a good deal from him and is then going to invest that money. If, as a fan base, we need to stop expecting this board to invest the money we bring in. So I'd rather he just wasn't part of the squad. I'd rather the players who aren't good enough and shows they aren't good enough aren't part of the team. I think there's a real like a complacency that sets into a football club when you start considering squad players as like a benefit to you or a bonus. Oh, these guys are all right to be, you know, cover for the subs. That's not how a good team, a championship winning team should operate. The players on the bench should be players that you can slot in and that can challenge the players who are in the starting 11. And the more you give squad players who are thrust into the starting lineup because of massive amounts of injuries or really bad transfer dealings, if you reward them with contracts and you tell them they are good enough to play for this team, that's what you're saying throughout the whole club. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I mean, I always think of, it's a totally different level, but when Liverpool had no centre-half and no goalkeeper, they went and spent all the money in their transfer budget on one of the best goalkeepers in the world, and Virgil van Dijk. Mm-hmm. And then they skyrocketed with the rest of that squad. There's obvious deficiencies that Celtic never fix. And the way to do that is not signing up players who have come in, shown they aren't good enough on long-term deals.
Yeah, definitely. Yep.
You do make a lot of good points, to be fair. I was going to say counter to it, but you do make a lot of good points. I think from a business perspective, it does make sense, both in terms of fair pay for his labour, essentially, from what he's doing, because he has played week in, week out.
Footballers are underpaid, says Stuart Biggins. No,
I just, you know. Well, yeah, fair point. I just mean, from a business perspective, if he is an asset and if he is to be sold on at some point, then yeah, you want him under contract. It's not really something that we have an enormous issue with in terms of money in the bank. And as you say, you're not going to reinvest it, so what does it matter? I think it's an inevitability that he's going to get that and he's going to sign that. I don't think that means that he is the starting centre half next season. I think that if the season doesn't play out the way that we hope, I would be very surprised if Rodgers is there. And I think that Liam Scales would be amongst the very first casualties of a new manager coming into the club. I think that Rodgers is stubborn, but he's not an idiot. And I don't think that he would see that as a, you know, plausible way to move forward. I do think that Liam Scales probably is good enough to be a fourth choice centre half in your squad, albeit that's where he should be.
Yeah.
Even now, I think he should be, like, dependent on, you know, the nature of the injuries we've had. So if that's possibly what they're looking at, great. But it's not sustainable to have him in the team. He's going to get lots of plaudits at the end of the season if we end up winning the league for like what a role he had in it. I think everyone's going to know that if we achieve what we want to achieve, it'll be in spite of that, not because of that. And as I say, the most damning thing is that I think there's nobody more aware than him himself. But fair play. I think you'll get it. And I think that hopefully you use that either as an option to sell him on, if that's in not next year, the year after, or he's bombed out the squad when someone else comes in, if it all goes to shit. Well,
is the best argument against this not that we literally did this with Stephen Welsh last summer?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, it is.
That's. To think of some of the positives then, so Lorenzo, you mentioned earlier Nicholas Kuhn. I've kind of seen mixed opinions, but I thought he was really good, particularly in the first half on Sunday. He had the beating of his fullback going in inside and outside. His passing was really good. We saw that for Dyson's first goal. And I think Keith made the point on the reaction. It was almost Paddy Roberts-esque. I know there was a lot of talk of that before he signed, but I was really encouraged by his performance, and it gives him a sort of a base to hopefully build on for the rest of the season.
Yeah, he just looked much brighter. He looked much, you know, however much you want to read into Rodgers' comments about weight or his sore teeth or whatever it was. You know, he did look just like more up for it. He looked like a new signing, looked like it was almost like his debut at Parkhead.
Yep.
He was trying to create things. Like you say, he was going in and out. He didn't look like a winger. I think we've struggled for wingers who are more than, who have two dimensions to their play. Mm-hmm. And what we've been lacking is somebody that can take somebody to the byline. So maybe we're all hoping Kuhn is that. But what he showed the other day is that if he's got willing runners in that front three with him, he can make a lot happen. Mm-hmm. He can actually be that final ball. And maybe we saw the best out of Kuhn because we had Dyson making those runs. And for me, I'm excited to see Kuhn in that kind of form and that kind of spirit with Kyogo making those runs as well. There's so many passes he played from Aida and chances he created and little scoop balls, all these little things that I think if you had Kyogo in the park with them the whole time, they could have had a really, really good relationship. And the three of them, if they're on form, makes sense to me. I feel like when you look at Palma's kind of form on the other side, you've got a player who kind of has his head straight on the ball or the feet of the defender in front of him, and it's one kind of idea, and he'll run headlong into it, and he'll start to hit a brick wall, and it doesn't feel like he's got that change up yet in his game to involve other players. I think Palmer's got a thing where if he's not getting by somebody, he'll come inside like he's playing FIFA and it's that easy, or he's Arjen Robben. Whereas Kuhn for me looked like somebody who was taking each decision based on its merits and based on how the defender was playing him. So he looked like he had a bit of intelligence, and I think we've been missing that in the wings. Somebody who brings you creativity and passing and genuine assists. Like the idea that Kuhn could be somebody that lays on a lot of goals instead of being a Celtic winger that needs to bomb in at the back post or come up with goals from outside the box, whatever. He looks like a little bit of a different option.
Yeah, I thought so too. It's almost like a winger slash number 10 in a way, is number 10, but the traditional number 10 position strip.
Yeah, I was very encouraged by it for a number of reasons. I thought he had end product. We saw that for the first time. He just looked a lot more confident, I think, after his initial sort of performance. When you see like the Hibs game, etc., he's not looked particularly confident either, as someone that's maybe not quite sure what's required of them. Maybe there's also a little bit where, you know, he was signed in the middle of the transfer window when there was still hope that Celtic were going to address 3, 4, or 5 problem positions. And in many ways, when they don't, he becomes, you know, the lightning rod, much the same as Ida has, where it's like, that's it, that's all we're getting. We're getting this guy from, you know, from Austria and blah, blah, blah. And so I think it's easy to have maybe a negative opinion, but I think he showed that he can offer a lot more. And I was really impressed with his effort. He properly like ran himself into the ground. I know there was some concerns about injury, but I think it was literally just cramp because he's not really played. And it's this season, it's just going to be a case of, I don't care who gets us over the line, but if everyone can just do a little bit, and you've seen that from Yang, where he didn't look like he was offering much at the start of the season, and he's contributed now for a patch. If Kuhn can do it for a bit, and then if Palmer comes back, and if he can do it for a bit, I don't care whoever kind of gets it over the line. I know you're not mic'd up, Gal, but you must be furious seeing Kuhn do well, having almost literally written him off about a week ago, saying he's finished, career's done.
Let's see what he does.
Long term,
you know. Just when you're talking this, I couldn't help think of that song, I Don't Care How You Get Here, Just Get Here.
that's us in the league trophy.
Yeah, I was really encouraged by him, and it's encouraging as well that he tended to do, as we said, he was able to go both ways, play the pass as well, and just hearing that Rangers have departed from the Europa League.
R.I.P.
Rest again. In peace.
But we also have the form of Yang, who'll be back soon after. Is he back?
He misses
the Johnston game.
So Livingston
it's
game.
Encouraging that some of our wingers are playing their way into form. And hopefully, as you say, if we can get Kyogo played back in, it's encouraging that he scored. I thought he took the goal really well. Whereas Ida, I thought it was one of his poorest performances as well. So, Lorenzo, do you think it's basically Kyogo's back in and you've got to try and make this work to the end of the season now?
Yep, I think it's a no-brainer. Kyogo's, you know, best since Larsson for me. I think the idea that this player suddenly needs benched for a big... I mean, I think in modern football especially, you've got to be really classed to be a big striker that can consistently score goals. You get the guys who score 8, 9 a season and then get big, like... The big boy that's in for Newcastle, Wood, whatever his name is.
Yeah.
The guy scores 9 goals a season, but he's a £30 million striker because he's big. And I totally get that, and I think these are great second options and they work in the right team. And we've seen if Ida gets the service, he'll score a header if he gets, you know, 4 sniffs at it, which is a good, it's a pretty good thing to have and a good return, but it's not the best we can play. The best we can play is with guys like Kuhn, Maida and Palma and Kyogo. There's no point and suddenly trying to be a team that lumps it into a pretty middling, mediocre striker just because that's his skill set. And I think you saw that the other day, that all the good stuff that was coming from Kuhn wasn't met. It was met by Maida on the other side, but it wasn't met by a striker performance, you know, sniffing up goals from all that attack. So I think it's a case of playing the team to its strengths. And for that little period, for whatever was wrong with Kyogo in a Rodgers system or whatever, putting Ida in there and him getting those big goals, perfect, it worked, but it's not a consistent to the end of the season thing. If we're going to win these big games, you've got to have somebody with the quality of Kyogo playing.
Yeah, I totally agree. I'm sure you'll be the same, Stuart, that Ida feels good as the alternative when it isn't working. If you're 20 minutes to go and you're drawing or you're down, then start to play to those strengths, knock it long to Ida, whatever. But I don't think that's any formula to be starting the games for Celtic.
Yeah, I still don't think that we've seen Kyogo start with this sort of, not new look Celtic, but certainly since they've had their sort of chin checked attitude wise since that Motherwell game. And it's the only way that you're going to play him into form. With regards to Ida, it falls under the category of skills where it's a real Rodgers vanity decision where he's making a point. The fact that he was so public as well about the fact that it was his signing after Mark Lawwell went, he was like, oh, I heard that it was an option and I thought, yeah, get him in because he'd liked him. Maybe he was at Liverpool or Leicester or one of those two teams. But if he's so stubborn as he can be and continues, then I think it's the sort of thing that could cost us the league. I think if you have Kyogo in and play him into form, it builds with that narrative as well. You get McGregor, Carter Vickers, Hatate and Kyogo, and suddenly that's your spine of your team. And Rangers aren't competing with this faltering, weak Celtic side. They're like, oh, fuck, they actually look quite a bit like that Celtic of old that have like turned us over a couple of times. And these are all really important things. I would like to see it at the weekend, whether we do or not. I think it'll be quite telling if we don't, because with that Ibrox game on the horizon, do you really think that Adam Ida's the player to lead the line in that environment? I personally don't
know.
So, yeah, I think it'll be an interesting one, and I think it's very much on the manager.
Yeah, I agree. Looking ahead then to some news, so as we said, that Celtic defeated Livingston to go into the semi-finals, and we were drawn against Aberdeen. Today we found out that it will be the Saturday, the 20th of April, and it'll be a 12:30 kickoff. Lions are quite happy with that, the fact that the Saturday we play first and hopefully get our names in the final.
Yep, Saturday game's the one you want. You want to put your marker down, be a name first on the kind of final sheet. And I don't know, we've seen it before where Hampden can be kind of shite on the Sunday, kind of thing. So all the good reasons to be the Saturday, so happy with that.
Yep, Stuart?
Yeah, same. I think the pitch is one of my sort of main concerns with that sort of thing where you never know how the weather's going to be and you could end up playing in an absolute cow field. But yeah, I think my enthusiasm for the Scottish Cup semi-final will probably be dictated by the Derby game the week or two before to see what we're playing for, because I don't know how you felt, but I would have much rather played Rangers in the semi than in the final. I think that if you go and win the league, brilliant, then it's a real sort of put them back in their place. This is your chance to win the double and for Rodgers to peacock as much as he wants because he's taken a lot of shite this year. If you don't win the league, it's real arse collapsing, don't give them a treble situation, and I don't really want to be there for that.
Almost even if you do it, sort of deny them a treble, it's still, we've got like one cup out of three.
Exactly.
The other news, Lorenzo, was that Aberdeen's request for a 50-50 ticket allocation spot has been rejected. They'll receive 19,000. I think that's fair, given the numbers that they usually bring. And I think the alternative that they've done before is where they have given a 50-50 spot and then there's tickets handed back and then Celtic sell them. That's not ideal for Celtic and the people in the Home Cup ticket scheme.
Yeah, I think it is an awkward one. Like, I do think the ideal utopian solution is that 50-50, but I don't know the logistics of that, what, like you say, makes the most sense. It would be great if there's a 50-50 split, and maybe there only needs, it's a football semi-final. There should be a 6-hour window on it, a day's window on it almost, or a week or something. But I don't really care. I was reading it today, I saw it all over my timeline, and it was people with so much like discourse around it.
Yeah.
Unless you're an Aberdeen fan that's trying to buy ticket 19,001. I really don't give a shit. Like, I'll happily see them moan about it when the 19,000 are sold out or something. And if they're sold out in 6 hours. But yeah, as I say, utopian, good idea would be 50-50. But if Aberdeen haven't been selling like that, then there's no reason to expect it.
Yeah. Sure. Much the same.
Yeah, very much the same. If you're not meeting supply and demand, then, you can't have a stadium with missing seats, or as you say, this kind of non-ideal situation of how you get rid of those remaining seats. You're right, the people are going to moan about everything. They've got the kickoff to moan about as well, so just...
I mean, they can validly moan about the kickoff, I think, because I'm assuming they'll need to come down the Friday or get a bus and fucking... I don't care, again, it's not my team.
Yeah.
But I understand that grumble.
Yeah. Make a weekend of it.
Yeah. See a proper city.
Okay. Yeah. The other news was the new Irish connection Clobber. Stuart, you know when I'm poo-pooing it, there's something severely wrong with the club. Even yeah. I was like, ah, no.
Read the room, guys. Yeah, just shameless bastards, honestly. Like, it's so... I'm amazed that they just continue to do it, though. So, like, I wonder when these decisions are made.
They must be a long
time. Must be a long time ahead of schedule. Yeah. Same goes for... It's like, on my list of reasons that I think Celtic won't win the league, hydro, all that sort of business. They're just, like, so naive, unbelievably naive in these sorts of things. The fact that they were, like, so sleek about releasing the accounts, like, yeah. to show how much... They know what the public perception is. They know what the perception of the windows have been, not even just this season, but before. They know there's this notion that they're, like, just robbing the fans and not giving anything back. And there's also not like a should we pull that one, maybe push that back to the summer, see if we win the league, see if we win any double, stick it out the day after. And they're kind of doing it. It's not that it's a bad thing, but the whole like come and see Celtic legends. It's like I'll come and see Celtic legends when you start fucking winning games comfortably again.
Well, on that one, they've put that game on a potential Scottish Women's Cup final day.
Really? I didn't know.
And we're in the semis of it. Ugh. Again, that naivety, lack of foresight. Let's maybe save it for the women's podcast to moan about it, but it's like the lack of care throughout the club on the perception of them or on the effect it has on the wider elements of the club that are outside the boardroom seems insane.
Yeah, definitely. I half joked, Lorenzo, as well about the when William Scales was talking in Gaelic. I thought that's that hides all the ills of the season, but I think we can all see through it. And to Stuart's point, I think the only thing that makes sense is that these dates were locked in well before the season kind of came off the rails a wee bit.
Aye, I will never not expect like a Celtic St. Patrick's Day cash grab. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's what you see happen all the time. But I think with the price of the kits, the amount of things, they know how families operate as well. Families will want to... You know, kids will want every strip that comes out. All these things are just, again, just oversights for the club because there's always profit to be made. And the markup on these kits is insane because it'll just be another cheap piece of shite. It's green, white and orange. And it's the kind of thing you'd see outside like a Charlie and the Boys gig for a fiver.
Yeah.
And they're going to be selling it for 50 quid and they don't care about any argument other than that because that markup's insane.
Yeah, definitely. The other news that came out today was that Lewis Palma, who we heard yesterday would be out injured. It's now been reported in Honduras that there's a potential, Stuart, that he'll miss the Rangers game.
Yeah, it's not ideal, but also in terms of the key members of the squad rushing to get back, he would be lower down my list of priorities purely because since he's sort of come out of the team, he's had little to no influence when he's come on. It's not like... When Kyogo's been dropped out of the team, he's been coming on looking really lively, giving the manager some questions, making him think, scoring goals. I don't know if this is true, but Kyogo scored like 5 and 6. Is that right? That can't be right.
I don't think that's right.
I'm thinking of a different footballer.
Producer,
you might have checked that. It doesn't seem right now that I've said that out loud on a podcast, but anyway, he's contributing, he's scoring goals, and I don't think you're really seeing that from Palma. I don't think it's his attitude as a professional. I think there's maybe just an element of adjustment to come from him in terms of how things work at a club like Celtic. And I think that that's been a bit of a problem maybe across the team this season where there's a lot of new elements coming in, people that maybe don't understand the levels. The fact that it's even being discussed so much by the likes of Brendan Rodgers and Callum McGregor saying, you know, that's not what the level is at Celtic. Like, you should kind of know that or you should have an idea of that before you kind of sign. So I think having Palma would give you a bit of depth in terms of, like, we need something. He is a player that could come on and produce a moment of magic, but I don't think that's Lewis Palma that you're going to be turning to kind of win the league gets over the line.
Palma seems to me, you mentioned earlier, Stuart, about players, if they come into, like, a fully functioning Celtic team, I think you would see the best of him. But when you've got such a sort of inconsistent, particularly in the wing areas, when you're relying on someone with him, and don't get me wrong, he carried the team to a certain extent early in the season, but when he's kind of found his form a wee bit, or it's kind of tailed off a wee bit, he doesn't seem like someone you can rely on so much, and it's probably too much to expect that anyway of a new signing, particularly when the season's been the way it is.
Yeah, I think you're also replacing Jota with anybody is tough, but when you're trying to do it in the bargain bin, you know, sub £5 million to replace a guy you've just sold for £25 million.
That's it.
That drop off's going to be huge, and it's going to take a bit of magic to find a player at that price point who can do that. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that looks like Palma yet, to be honest. I think there's enough about his game that you can see, maybe attitude's the wrong word, but decision making. You know, diving sometimes for no reason and not playing players in the box because he's got his head down. That's something that can be worked on. That's something a player can change, and particularly when they first arrive at the club, they want to make the big impact, so they're often more selfish or whatever. But he, with his injury, that, again, I would fear because of the lack of quality wingers we have. I don't want anyone injured. Will somebody else get injured before Ibrox? Very possibly. So we'll need Palma fit. But yeah, in a vacuum, like starting 11 wise, like Stuart says, he's lower down on my list of priorities.
Yeah.
That's close enough. Yeah. Come here. Is that all? Oh, good. The other news is that Daniel Kelly, Stuart, is close to signing a new 4-year deal. That's positive. I think they obviously scored the great goal against Dundee a few weeks ago. He's a player that Rodgers talks highly of. I like him. I like his ability to get around the pitch, and he seems quite stocky as well, which is good for a young player because often when they come in, that seems to be one of the areas they have to bulk up on, etc.
Yeah, I think it's definitely positive. Obviously, we don't really know what Daniel Kelly's level is at the moment because we haven't seen enough of him, but certainly the manager talks really highly of him. The players were talking pretty highly of him as well. He seems to have, you know, all this stuff about them like patting his head and all that when he scored his goal, whether that's like he's kind of in with the bricks with him. But we talk a lot about how there's next to no access for young players coming through. That was always the knock with the Vata situation, that there wasn't minutes there. And we've seen a lot of young players go against staying at Celtic to try and develop. And I think there's a combination of him being shown a pathway, showing that he can get minutes, and probably the fact that he's put himself in that position is through the fact that he is probably at that level. And I think it's really good business to get that secured for just now, and maybe provides a bit of hope that, you know, as Callum McGregor winds down, is Daniel Kelly the next kind of Callum McGregor coming through? You can't really say that just now, but it's sort of green shoots, and there's not a huge amount of them from the B team or from the youth team. So anything that's kind of positive, I think you take at the moment.
Yeah, and this is almost in stark contrast, Lorenzo, to the Liam Scales question here. This seems like a deal that should happen.
Yeah, I mean, I have my issues with the B team. I think they're all play against nobody's.
You're a big hater of the B team, aren't you?
poor Lewis sitting
there. So to see him, you know, having minutes in the first team, particularly a team that's not 10 points ahead in the league and totally rolling, you know, and coming in and contributing and not looking out of place. To see him get a deal is great because we have been losing these kind of players.
Is he not looking out of place because the level has dropped?
Well, yes.
Let's think positively.
But I'm all right to give him a deal right now because he's not had a chance to show me that he's shite, much like his compatriots from the B team have.
Right, just before we turn to the St Johnstone game, there's a question from Tony, a nice cheery one again. It says, if we do not win the league, for what it's worth, I still believe we will. Good on you, Tony. Are the panel concerned that it could lead to a huge shift in momentum towards the other side of the city and a period of barren years for us? As has been discussed at length, they will not hesitate to consolidate from a position of strength by spending, and not having the buffer of Champions League finance would make our board even less likely to open up the purse strings. Does this present a potential risk that a gap is allowed to build? I personally think that as a support, we are less likely to accept this than we were in the 90s, and they have been over the past decade. However, our board's lack of willingness to bow to fan anger, even in times of prosperity, does not fill me with confidence that they would react in a satisfactory manner. Keep up the great work. Just before I'll come to you, Stuart, with this one. It almost feels like if the horrible was to happen and we don't win the league, I think that would... It's so frustrating because I actually think that would spark the Celtic board into action. It's almost like... They probably half-arsed it this season, thinking that Rodgers could do it himself, being the big-name manager and the success that he had, so they tried to do it on the cheap to try and get this massive pot of gold. But I think they would get such a fright, they would probably spend the money that they should have spent last summer, and then by that point, Rangers have got the riches of the Champions League.
Yeah, I think I would tend to agree. It wouldn't be my initial concern that we're going to go into a barren spell in terms of trophies or performance. For one... The club is very cash rich at the moment, as is. It's more just if you add on that Champions League money, you're talking about like untold wealth that we've not really seen.
Different stratosphere from what we've
totally
been.
And there's also not it sounds like a stupid thing to say because we all know the score when it comes to European qualification, but there's nothing to suggest that you couldn't still make it to the Champions League through qualifying, if I'm not mistaken.
I think it'll be quite difficult, but
Very much so, yeah, you're talking about a higher level. And I think that in that regard, that's almost like a sort of second chance where you probably would see some action. I think the biggest difference, though, is that you're not talking about, you know, the COVID season where there's no fans. We've seen visceral protest within the ground in terms of direct action against Peter Lawwell, against, you know, his son, who's now kind of moving on, and against the board. And I think that they maybe are aware that that is coming down the pipe in terms of if it doesn't go our way, I think there will be a really, really visceral sort of outcry about it from the fan base. I think that the club are financially well set up. I think Rangers would absolutely try and consolidate that, but I think that there would be a reaction in whether that's a new manager and a big spend to try and either right the wrong domestically or try and secure that sort of Champions League money at a second go. I think you would see a reaction. So my frustration would just be with the fact that it was in our hands for so long, for so much of everything, and yet again we've kind of done it to ourselves. And you're handing them trophies. That Rangers team are really consistent at the moment, but they're not really good. You're seeing a really, really good team blowing teams away week in, week out. They're getting over the line. The manager's getting a tune out of quite an average squad of players. So to hand them a treble, for example, just feels unthinkable. And that's where my concern would be, not in what's coming down the line, because I think that would have to spark a reaction.
Yeah. What's your thoughts on that, Lorenzo?
Yeah, in terms of like the potential of barren years, the Rangers squad is not one that worries me in any real way. I think they would have to spend all their money to make a squad that would make me think they're going to blow us away in the league. I tend to agree that there would be a reaction, but I just think this board has missed so many opportunities to put the foot on the neck of Rangers and just kind of tidy this league up for the next 5 years. They've missed all those chances. This was another one. If we win the league this year, the gap we have on them financially, where they're having to spend to keep up, and they already have a bigger wage bill than us. The idea that we're operating where our closest competitor literally ceased to exist and came back and spends more money on their playing staff than we do. To the board, that's shrewd business. Look at us, we've not been losing the league to them. But it's really poor. The idea that you've not taken that advantage to take leagues, huge leaps and steps on from Rangers and compete at a higher level. And we're going to miss that boat again. I get what you say about qualification as well. Maybe that's the impetus to go, let's go spend the money. But if we do happen to win this league, we do, in my opinion, have a better squad of players. We do have a manager who's shown he can win this league. If we do win this league, we have to spend it because we have to kick on and get away from them again. The idea that Rangers can go bust and come back and get this Champions League money and be closer and closer to us financially as well as ahead of us playing wise is ridiculous. And from a business perspective, for a board of a, you know, a family that's run this club almost, there should be no more kind of damning indictment of their poor business than losing this money to Rangers.
Yeah.
Having years to build up to, with this league format, Champions League format changing, the wealth on the horizon, taking a gamble like this by penny pinching to make that money should be seen as what it is, which is a terrible business decision because you have to spend money to make money.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, I think just what you're talking about with the restructuring, the actual teams that you're likely to face are going to be of a higher caliber, and you know how difficult these games are anyway in terms of when they come in the season. If Celtic are having to go that route, you have to assume it's because, you know, we've not won and there's probably been an overhaul in terms of a new manager and a lot of new players, and that just compounds it and makes it more difficult. That's why, you know, these couple of years where you had the automatic qualification were the time to kick on. And yeah, I think that I'm not suggesting for a second that it's a foregone conclusion and that that's the plan now. But I think it's just very, very difficult. At least we get to win the league.
We'll lose talent in the summer.
Yeah,
definitely. You know, Matt O'Reilly's gone.
O'Reilly.
Hatate could go. CCV could go. Kyogo could go. Like, anybody could go. And we'd need to then replace them. And we're going to try and do it again by spending fucking £500,000.
Yeah, it's crazy. And sure, I think you made the point there about obviously during COVID, the fans weren't there. And we obviously had the Ross County game where fans turned up at the stadium, etc. But it seems to me that now the majority of fans you speak to, there was always people who were very sort of loyal to the board, and like Lorenzo said, oh, we pat ourselves in the back because we're not them across the city. But I think the support are starting to sort of build and organise, and there's a real disdain now for the board and for what they're seeing. So very, I think there would so, be yeah. maybe a reaction that we haven't seen since the 90s towards the board.
Perhaps, yeah. And I think it's just a case of, for the likes of Desmond, it's who goes under the bus for it. And, you know, is he going to protect the manager in that situation if he was his pick and he's the one that he's brought in? Because obviously Rodgers is not blameless in what's happened this season. We've talked about it in this podcast. We talk about it every week. But you're already seeing that there's been enough, as well, there should be enough rumbling, conjecture, whatever, that they're looking at the recruitment team, and now that they've said that can't continue. Yeah. So they're aware that there's problems, and then it's more, do they clean house completely? Do people fall on their swords? Because they're not really the type. No. So it just depends on what the reaction is. But I think you can absolutely guarantee that if that is the set of circumstances at the end of the season, if Rangers win the league or if they win a treble, Celtic fans will protest and they will be vilified and they will be told that they are, you know, selfish and that they're entitled and yep. they're this and that, and they've had this incredible domestic dominance, and you lose one season in a closely contested season where you've had injuries and blah blah blah, and you can see it already.
Yeah, you make the headlines yourself
completely. So I think it's, when you talk about, you know, not being like them across the city, the notion that Celtic would ever let the club die or just let it all that sort of play out, how could you go from one extreme of you can't be that, but then you can be entitled when you try and remedy, just
try and force change.
Exactly.
The equal fear for me is that we stumble our way over the line in this league and just do the same things again. Yeah. Have the same summer, do nothing in the Champions League, there's more games now to get fucking pumped in on TV, lose our best players, don't replace them with quality, and the cycle just repeats, but there's just more money. But there's not more money. Everyone in this Champions League system, everyone in football, will see their money go up.
Yeah.
Rangers, if they're in the Europa League or in Champions League was, will have more money than they had. Mm-hmm. Everyone's going to go up, so if we don't spend, it's going to be the exact same thing again.
Yeah,
I'd still take that.
Yeah,
your hand,
totally.
Your hand off for that, mate.
Here's everything you said, but give me that right now. Right, we'll just turn our attention to the weekend's game, St Johnstone at home. Just before we do that, we've got a question from Brian. He says, what are your biggest concerns going into the St Johnstone match at the weekend? For me, it's a lack of speed when moving the ball. Rodgers always says before each game that we've trained well, etc., but then we play the same slow upon this build-up. Do you guys feel that personnel changes that, or would they still be playing it slow? For me personally, I think there has been the odd occasion that we look back to the Dundee game where we started to come out the traps quickly, albeit they nearly scored early on. But
too far at the traps.
Yes. but to try and end on a sort of positive note, if we can take the best parts, Lorenzo, from the Livingston game, as we mentioned, Coon with his quick passing, hopefully with Kyogo into the mix, hopefully we can see a quick start and try and get the game put to bed early, because as you mentioned earlier, it feels like if we're knocking at the door, we don't score enough goals, then the fear starts to creep in.
Yeah, I think for me at this point, just in terms of Saturday or the weekend, it's either Coon, Kyogo.
Yeah.
And that, I think, immediately solves a lot of your ponderous play. The wingers who haven't been kind of stepping up, the wingers who take too long on the ball going right back in to the middle of the park and back to the defenders who can't move the ball forward. The issues that are the most pressing are still there, the defence and the vulnerability of it. But I think in terms of us getting closer to playing our best football, it's personnel for me right now, because I don't think we're going to see some upheaval in the way Rodgers is telling these guys to play. So if we get guys like Maeda, Coon, Kyogo running, playing off each other, forging relationships. Yang in that as well, you know, when he's back. I think Yang is of that ilk. I think that's what we need right now, because the midfield three have suddenly kind of lost a lot of their dynamism. Mm-hmm. They're not breaking beyond them anymore. So again, it's kind of back to relying on that front three. So if it's those three available, I think that's great. If it's fucking James Forrest coming on 60 minutes in to salvage a goal, then we've got issues.
Think of how much joy it will bring you.
Oh, the best winger at the club.
The best winger at the club, yeah.
I think that the way that he's going to approach it is the play CCV from the start, try and get the game won by 60 minutes and try and blow them away. And I think that that comes down to just taking your chances. If Celtic take an early chance, you've seen it in games, you saw it in the Submarine game, you've seen it in the Dundee game. If you can take an early chance, build on it, just don't even let the anxiety or the crowd become a thing. Thinking back to it though, like of all the poor performances, the 0-0 at the start of the season against St Johnstone is one of the worst games of football I've ever been to. It was like torture, like actual literal torture. So anything to avoid that, and that was Celtic playing at their very, very slowest and most ponderous. So hopefully, as you say, a bit more dynamism, play Coon. Lorenzo, do you want to say the line while you're here? Because everyone quotes it. To ride the hot hand.
If you're not cheating, you're not trying. Oh, ride the hot hand.
Yeah.
Nicholas Coon, yeah.
Yeah, that's what
I was thinking hashtag Yang Gang for a second. Yeah.
We'll review that next season in the predictions one.
Yang Gang would put us in hot water because we're playing an ineligible player.
Yes, absolutely. That's probably the only thing that we haven't done this season that's kind of against
us. Too many catchphrases is the issue.
Well, that is the problem. I've never, not since Where's My Right Back, have I heard something get quoted so much in The Cynic for someone that's contributing like that.
Yeah. Just on that St Johnson game earlier in the season, Gal, myself, and Bowd did the reaction to that, and oh god, it was horrendous. I would never do it, but if you go back and listen to it, probably a lot of the concerns that we had have actually, yeah, they have.
His tumble's gone.
If we were to if we were to predict the lineup then, so we've obviously mentioned the front three, Lorenzo, but who would your back five be?
Good. Arthur Boric. I think it'll just be the same again, to be honest. I don't think much is going to change.
Think CCV comes straight back in?
I don't.
No.
I don't. I just think there has to be... Livingston are so shite. St Johnson. But point stands, Livingston are so shite.
Everyone's getting it tonight from Lorenzo.
We should have enough. In fact, if he's fit, I'd play him. Because I don't like the idea of just getting through these games, because it takes, as we've seen, one chance, two chances. And it's because of the guilt-edged chances we give up. If St Johnstone come out and they play all right and they create a couple chances against, you know, CCV and Scales or CCV and Welsh, whatever, fine. But if it's Welsh and Scales, I fully expect Joe Hart to have to make two game-saving saves.
Yeah.
So, yeah, if CCV's fit, I would play them. I don't think they will, though. I think there is a huge fear of going to Ibrox without your captain, without CCV, without a Hatate option. I just think there's enough fear in that lineup and how sparse it could look at a game where we could lose the league. Mm-hmm. That I think they might sum.
Right. Well, what's your thoughts?
My thoughts are that I think you'll play him if he's fit. But then almost everything that you said tonight is like Rodgers has said this and Rodgers has said that, and he's full of shit. So there's nothing to suggest that Carter Vickers is fit or isn't fit. And, yeah. You know,
I kind of feel that with, as you've said, Lorenzo, like every game now there is a vulnerability, and I think you almost have to be short sighted and play what you can for the very next game, because you might have that, or we need to keep up for Ibrox, and then you don't win against St Johnstone and Livingston.
Exactly. Yeah, if you're 5 points behind going into Ibrox, then you're really fucked. So I think they'll start with him. I think you'll get him 60 minutes and get him out of Dodge, and hopefully you just take your chances and you're clinical. The one that concerns me is that I think he's going to persist with Ida up top, just out of stubbornness. And it's a shame. It's viscerally sad to watch Kyogo like moping about on the bench and like doing his wee warm up. And I just think that for what? This isn't even a player that we're going to sign. You know, I think that if it was a loan option to buy or some sort of he's like the Maeda deal where he's coming and it's all sort of done and dusted. Celtic are probably priced out of signing a player like that. It's probably like £6-8 million, and he's not at that caliber. So it seems mad to sort of spite your star striker, your star player for that. But
and a guy like
it's a very good point. I meant to mention that when we were talking about them before, that what chance have you got of O playing his way into form if he's not getting any minutes? He's not even getting that 10-15 minutes now. And that's another thing. You know, Yang drops out of the team because, you know, everyone's thinking he's a write-off. You know, he's born offside, all that sort of stuff. And then he comes back in out of necessity and suddenly looks like he can add something, and it's quite exciting and quite vibrant. Maybe in the spirit of just like chopping and changing to try and get a reaction, maybe you do need to see O for a little bit. I'm not suggesting start him, of course, but give him a chance and see if that's something that will turn the tide. Fuck knows. Desperate.
Yeah. Yeah, there's been short-sighted, and then there's that. Just playing Ida for every game. Yeah. Right, we'll finish off with a quiz then. So I said last week on air, and I will remember today when I was putting this together, that I would do a different quiz from the lineup quiz. So a wee bit different. It's relating to the current squad as of 23-24 and some people in the squad and games themselves. So I'm going to ask you five questions. I want you to write down your answers and then we will review them. So some of them it will be closest to, and that's it. I'll explain as we go.
How many games we drop points? No, closest to.
So five questions. We'll see who comes out on top, and if it's a draw, I've got a tiebreaker as well.
Lovely.
So question number one, this is according to Transfer Marked, is who is the tallest person in the Celtic squad?
Goodness.
Ooh.
Not him. Right, we'll go over the answers at the end, okay? Okay, question number two. Probably see this one coming. Who is the smallest person in the Celtic squad? Right, for question one, there is two people the same, so if you get either of them,
here we go.
There's joint. For question two, there's only one person.
Do you get double points if you get both?
No. You just get the satisfaction of being very clever.
Very right.
Yes. Okay. Question number three. How many goals have Celtic scored at home in the league this season? And this will be closest to...
Seven or eight. It can't be more than that.
Single digits.
Yeah.
How many
games we had? 28, something like
that. We played 29 games, so feels like we've had...
Not many.
Four home games. Okay, give you a bit of time. Question four, how many goals have Celtic conceded at home in the league this season?
Jeez.
Too many. Feels like a lot, doesn't it? Okay. And question five, how many times have Celtic been leading at half time in the league this season in both home and away games, so combined? So we've played 29 games, so that helps. Anyway. Right, we're ready?
I think so.
Just to go over them quickly again. So, number one was who's the tallest. Number two, who's the smallest. Number three, how many goals have Celtic scored at home in the league? Four, how many goals have Celtic conceded at home in the league? And five, how many times have Celtic been leading at half time this season in both home and away games in the league? Okay, we're ready?
Yep. How do we change at the end there?
That's fine. Okay. Right, I'll just go answer about. So, Lorenzo, who did you go for?
Benjamin Sigrist.
Correct. Stu?
I've gone Lagerbielke.
Incorrect. So, it was either Joe Hart or Benji Sigrist. So, 1-0 to Lorenzo. Okay. Question two, who's the smallest person in the squad? Stu, I'll come to you.
Oh, it's fucking Tilio.
Well, he wasn't listed in the...
Okay, well, the answer that I've actually written down, because I changed my answer mid-speech there, is Kuhn.
Incorrect.
I put Kuhn.
Incorrect, so it's Kyogo.
What? Oh. I saw Kuhn in the park the other day. He's fucking tiny.
Yeah. So, still 1-0 to Lorenzo. Question three.
Well, I think we should check on Marco Tilio, because he is not taller than Kyogo.
I was
going to
say, is the person for number two on loan? But then I thought that gives it away.
Yeah.
And he's on loan.
He's on loan, so... Ah, right, fuck him.
Well,
he's never a Celtic player in his life.
VAR. Yeah.
How many goals have Celtic scored in the league at home this season?
40.
Incorrect.
I said 35.
You get the point, because it's 36.
Love that. Well, I don't, good. Obviously. We'd be good to score more.
Yes. Stuart, how many goals have Celtic conceded at home?
15.
About 15.
11. Oh. So no points.
No points.
No. Okay, so it's still one each, is that right?
Yes.
Yeah. And question five, how many times have Celtic been leading at half time, Lorenzo?
I think I've undershot it out of sheer pessimism. I put 12.
So I initially put 15 and changed it just before we did the answer review to 18.
So the answer is 16.
Oh!
Yes. So, yes. Just for a bit of fun then.
It's a bit like when Liam Scales gets the man of the match. He's like, what?
Smelling the atmosphere. Yeah. And just for a bit of fun, the tiebreaker question was, what is our current goal difference figure?
Oh, is it not like plus 40 something, plus 42, I think?
We'll have a go.
48.
Last, well, sorry, 46. Said that, right? Oh, 46.
Well done. Okay, so that brings us to an end there. Hopefully that was something you enjoyed. It'll be a bit different for the quiz there.
I did. I much, as everyone knows, once the season's complete, I don't remember anything that's happened. So,
yeah, you just like studying for an exam, isn't
it? Absolutely.
You're asked a question the next day, no idea. Yeah. But I've enjoyed this, Lorenzo. Thank you for being with us tonight.
Pleasure as always, as much as the football is shite.
It's true.
It's been good. It's been like Scales and Welsh conceded, but we won. We all had a great time.
Just happy to be here.
We'll see if Gal spends the money and gets a panel for next week.
Gets a panel and then doesn't use them. Brendan. So this has been the Cynic Weekly. I've been your host, Barry Gallagher, with Lorenzo Bertuzzi and Stuart Dugan, and we will speak to you down the road.